things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Bo.
Joe.
Bo.
Joe. Ed. Jim.
Ed.
Talking about last night was being a dreamer, and my childhood I didn't have much of availability about dreams. It was all about existing. When I got clean, I was inspired to come up with some kind of dream, and yeah, it wasn't like I received a little note passed to me, and like in school, you know, you pass those little notes around, and whoever winds up with it gets it. But it was, went to see this guy one day, because I was a newcomer, and I couldn't stay clean. And this guy, I've been going to a Friday night meeting, and he didn't have a vehicle. You know, we was talking about the Just for Today cars. I had a quite nice 72 Nova four-door sedan that you could do a lot in. loaded and clean. But anyway, we've been going to this Friday night meeting, and he asked me if I'd come over on Saturday afternoon, because I normally went and got loaded on Saturday. I'd go to the NA meeting on Friday night, go get loaded on Saturday. And I got there, and he was sitting at the desk with a little bitty typewriter, which I thought was a toy. But it turned out to be the real thing, and he was just the hunt and peck, you know, I asked the famous question, what do you think you're doing? And he said, well, I'm writing a book. And I said, what do you mean you're writing a book? I'd never met anybody that was actually involved in writing a book. And he said, well, our people are dying and they need literature. They need the message for addicts by addicts. And that's where my dream about a basic text for Narcotics Anonymous started. And that was spring of 77. And I finally got clean in May 2nd of 1977. And as it turned out, I was Bo's newcomer. And if you've been the guy that was sitting waiting on a newcomer, you know what a newcomer can bring you. Now a lot of different things occurred, and you know we're supposed to be telling y'all. And I see Joseph has got the gray form over there with a couple other little things that if you don't know what is, then you probably don't know the date that Narcotics Anonymous claims as its clean date. How many in the room know that? When the date of NA's birthday? Read the front of the book, you'll find it. Don't tell no one, you gotta read it. So my particular story, or my particular dream or wish is, or my experience is I was exposed to this concept that NA was going to be a hind-tit-sucking program of somebody else. Yeah, that's what I thought. Because I never did like the second tit myself. Always liked the cream from the top. And, you know, I didn't want the throwaway dope. You know, I didn't want to sleep with somebody that somebody else had just had. You know, I wanted the best. And the first World Lit Conference was in Wichita. And several people from our area went and come back and started talking about the people they'd seen, what had transpired, and all that. And then Lincoln, Nebraska came, the second World Lit Conference in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I went so that I could see. I'm not one to take your word for much, anyway. I won't see it for myself. And so I went to see how many people would show up. And where would they come from? You know, and what would they be like? And maybe if I could get laid, it'd be a bonus. Well, I was young and single, And I stayed that way for a lot of years. So. The single part, not young. Time will tick regardless of your, you know, what you're doing. But, and that's where I've seen the people from Iowa and South Dakota. I mean, those places to me from where I was coming from was halfway across the planet. You know, I done good to get out of Cobb County, which is there right around Atlanta. You know, so for me to go and see people like that, you know, from California, you know, we didn't have anybody in Narcotics Anonymous in my area that had more than time than both. There were some people coming to NA meetings that had more time, but they wasn't NA members. You know, they was trying to help this second-class, high-tech-sucking program get along a little bit, you know. So, I seen some NA people with clean time. And, you know, somebody's talking a while ago about, you know, if you had a year or 2 years, you could walk on water. Well, the only reason I got my second year chip is so that I could tell the honeys that I had years clean. Yeah. Motivation is a lot of things. But in between that first pecking, typing, and Lincoln, a miraculous thing happened in my life. I got to hear the message of Narcotics Anonymous. And I got to hear about our people dying, our people being locked up, our people getting their heads cut off, half of the head cut off so they could cut out the disease. You know, I don't know what medical procedure that's called, but they done it. You know. And that really cures the soul, you know. And I got a chance to make a decision of what fellowship I was going to go to. And, you know, like today, back then, there was multiple programs to choose from. And the choice for me came down to a prayer. And that prayer, you know, the guy I was talking to, you know, said, you know, as long as you make your prayer sincere, the Spirit will hear it. So I said, well, how do I do that? I said, well, come up with some kind of ritual that you want to do. And so for me, the ritual, you know, I'd been told to start sitting down 5 minutes a day just to be still. And in order to help me do that, they said, get a candle and stare at the candle, Ed. So that's what I did. And in doing that, I figured, well, if I'm going to be serious, I'll get naked. Well, you know, I mean, when I get naked, I like to be serious, so. I come up with this big elaborate ceremony about getting naked and laying out in the middle of the floor with the candle up in front of me, you know, help me decide where to go. I need to know. And, 7 days later, I went back to that candle and said, thank you. Because 7 days in a row, every time my phone rang, it was somebody from NA wanting to talk to me about getting clean or if I was going to a meeting. It was a AA answering service calling saying, we've got this guy that's on something called cocaine. Can you help him? Yeah, I'll talk to him. Give me his number. Yeah. And it wasn't just like one phone call a day, folks. It was, if I hung the phone up, it rang. And it was, you know, just quite obvious. So, you know, that's when I made, that was middle of 78, and I hadn't been anywhere since, except for Narcotics Anonymous. And I've been betting my life, like a lot of people, on Narcotics Anonymous and the literature that it has and the message that it has. It ain't backing up. You know, I got pushed to the corner, and I come out. Come out of the closet, ho ho. And, you know, it's just that way. And you know, I don't agree with everything that's happened since then. You know, but I do know that no matter what the rest of the fellowship does, I can always go to my home group and always look for that newcomer coming in. And I can always give them a phone number. And I can always go out to eat with them. And I'll always give them a hug. I can always go home to my altar and do my prayers, work my steps, call my sponsor, and come to events like this and let you know who I really am. And know that I don't stand alone. I hadn't since I really got clean, but I know in my soul I hadn't stood alone since 78. You know, I was talking last night about our history and what it proves. You know, look around. If you haven't had a spiritual awakening by this point, wake the fuck up. How much proof you want. You know, and yeah, we got challenges. We got people that's stealing from us left and right. Out and out porch bandits that'll stand outside the meeting and disrupt the meeting. They'll come in late. I call them tradition violators. They come in late. They want 4 or 5 hugs while somebody's trying to share about what the hell they're going to do about staying clean. So if I piss you off, go call your sponsor. That's what I do when you piss me off. But, you know, the unity that I know exists in the love affair that I have, I know it exists in y'all. You wouldn't have gave up what you gave up to be here today if it wasn't there. Some of you came here on a whim. You know, just cause somebody said to you. Yeah. But you had to sacrifice something. Yeah, and I want to make that sacrifice worthy. Yeah. I want to honor the predecessors that gave their lives so I could be here. You know. And there's no way we can tell all the story. You know, it's an extensive story. You know, you can have 4 guys up here sharing 20 minutes apiece and get it all done. You have to stay. You know, we have to stay and have the next one. Probably the best gift that I've gotten from Narcotics Anonymous is my ability to pray to what I believe in. And it's changed my life. Yeah, I remember the movies that I went to, you know, the Muppet movies, Star Wars, Dances with Wolves, all those movies brought a message to me about my spirit. You know, and there's just story after story about that, and I won't get into it because I'm running long, but stay and help. You know, somebody said about the takers eat well, the givers sleep well. Very, very true. I love y'all. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
My name's Bo and I'm an addict.
Hey, Bo. Hello.
Can y'all hear me?
Yes.
One thing everybody's forced to do is have a moment of silence for my sponsor, Bob B., who couldn't be here due to illness, and Jack W., from Northwest Pacific, who couldn't be here due to illness. Okay, but they're probably here in spirit. Okay, moment of silence, please. Thank you. Okay, and that sort of dramatizes the point, you know, we'll all die one day. You'll die one day. And recovery is about making the most of life. And what we can give you this morning, you can give to others in days to come, and that is your direct personal experience. Because part of the corporate malaise that goes on the West Coast, you've got a lot of self-seeking people who want recognition and want to be like in on a historical event and stuff. And one of the things I learned from a history writer named, I think it's Edward McCullough, but I could have the name wrong, at the University of Chicago. But he says the important thing to remember about history is the people that make history don't know it when they're doing it. They don't know how it's going to come out. They have no. They don't necessarily know for sure what's going on. I mean, like, you know, sometimes when I was marching against the war in Vietnam, I was young. I knew that I didn't know for sure, but it just seemed really wrong to be murdering people for no good reason. And you didn't live in those days, so I'm the witnesses here to tell you. The subplot of the Vietnam War that we heard as high school students was it's good for business. You know, and as human beings, you ought to think about that. You know, and that was years before I found NA. But one of the biases, because when you're building a bridge, you get everybody that's wanting that bridge to be built together and draw plans, and everybody plays a role, and you kind of always need more people, so you have to have this kind of like universal agreement thing going, and everybody's important, everybody plays a role if you're going to get the bridge built. And in our case, with the basic text, sort of from the get-go, and I got two guests, I may be able to remember both of them, but one, this guy named Dave G. from the Liquid Fellowship, he says, "One thing about it, Bo, is if y'all share your experience, nobody in the world can argue with you. I mean, you know, even if you had hallucination, you know, like, still, you know, it's your hallucination." And so we based everything on real personal recovery experience. And we actually created kind of a little language among ourselves, you know, the way technicians do when they're working on a computer or, you know, any kind of technical enterprise. And so anything that wasn't direct personal experience, we called a lie. So the lit workers writing your basic text, if it was just somebody's great idea, a good idea, the lit workers would say, "That's a lie." Remember that? That's what that was about, because we wanted the truth of recovery experience to be in the basic text. And we knew the AA history backwards and forwards and most of the literature. So we knew pretty much what we were doing, and, you know, within certain boundaries. And the strength of telling the truth and personal experience, I could take the rest of the day and talk about those two items. But see, the members, Bob B. and Jack W., can't be here to share their personal experience. And they're people that you'll know in the times to come that are not here, and you'll have to bear witness. But there's strength and power in that, because, you know, I think addicts have fourth-dimensional antennae that, you know, like when you say, "My feelings were hurt," which you could also say is, "My feelers were hurt." But we just can't see them. But we can tell when people are for real, you know. We can, like, get feelers and antennae. And they may be real. We just can't see them yet. But maybe if we meditate a little more, you know, we'll get there. But anyway, this is direct personal experience I'm talking about. But when I got clean, I had just ended a kind of a tour of duty down 10th Street in Atlanta. And so I had had plenty of personal recognition and 11 o'clock news at will. I knew how to call the TV stations and give them a story. And then I'd say, look, see, here I am. Because I'd get drunk and damn tell people, you know, like, hell, I damn been on TV all the time. I'd call up Paul Reynolds, hey, Paul, come on down. I got a story for you. So, and then, you know, half an hour later, we'd be on the 11 o'clock news. So it kind of blew their mind. And all that was way before NA and NA was way before the Lit Committee, in my personal experience. So by the time I got to NA, I had really done all my relapse, and I'm one of those people that took one white ship, you know, July the 10th, 1974. And the strip days were like 1970. To about 70, middle of 1970. And basically when the war stopped in Vietnam, the strip fell apart. I never realized the hippie movement was the other end of the Vietnam War. You know. I sponsor a guy in Michigan who saw the body bags packed with dope. That's what the war is really doing. And I'm not going to get into all that. Believe me, I'm passionate. But with the basic text, it was like from the front end of recovery, I thought like, oh my God, I could like really get into this shit. This is interesting stuff because these people are really working spiritual principles. And I've been going to synagogue and, you know, different churches all my life. And so that was kind of fascinating, you know, applied spirituality. What a gas. That's great. And then I thought, oh, my God, I might get, like, really involved. And I have to work my 12 steps. I'll be a phony motherfucker. I can't stand that. You know, no addict in the world wants to be embarrassed. I mean, God forbid. You know, especially in recovery when the lights are on. That's what really impelled me. Well, that and one other thing impelled me to work the 12 steps of NA back in like the 70s, you know, because everybody relapsed. I mean, there was 1 in 100 or 1 in 1,000 that stayed clean. So it wasn't just a revolving door. The door actually sort of spun, you know, it was spun in place. So they didn't just go out the revolving door. They were like caught up in the movement. And there wasn't that much attraction. I mean, there was just kind of like it is today. You got a lot of people in your rooms that practice the program, and they're attractive. And you can look into their eyes and say, I want some of that. And you got a lot of phony jerks that just haven't found recovery yet. They can't help it. You can't punish them or laugh at them. And, you know, they'll make it someday, a lot of them, maybe. Anyway, so that's what impelled me. Well, one, I wanted to be genuine and pay the price to be an NA member in deed as well as word. And the other thing was I like being different, so they weren't working the steps, so that kind of impelled me to work the steps, you know, just to be different. And so after 3 years, I went looking. I was writing letters to Jimmy Kay and phone calls, and I was asking who's working on the book, and I was getting like really weird little answers like keep coming back and blah blah blah. And I'm not being hateful or mean-spirited to tell you all of that. I later found out they had so little going that there wasn't much to talk about. I mean, you know, they had some grand dreams and stuff like that, but I am here to tell you NA was just a good idea before the basic text. And it's very meaningful to be, you know, a great training for a couple of years. I got elected World Lit Chair and all that. But then for 2 days, I saw the planet spread at my feet, whirl its chair. And then from that prior experience on the strip, I knew how shitty it was going to feel to let a year go by and not do nothing. I thought, oh my God, you know. And I had another kind of eerie thing. It's like, it kept happening all through those years. But anytime I would slow down, I could hear the screams of dying addicts. And I would just sit up a little straighter and try to do a little better. But, you know, there is a spirit side to all of this. I mean, everybody in this room has wondered what the real deal is. And, you know, there's kind of a problem of being the real McCoy. You don't have any place to hide. But today I think of myself as like a witness for those people that wrote your basic text. And yeah, I wrote a few lines and got to play a role and stuff like that. But to me, what I did was not that hard, you know. I was just hard at it. And just due to whatever quirk of faith and all that, I basically love all people. I like the straight guys and bank tellers and, you know, Prim and Prissy and, you know, cool guys and motorcycle guys and gay guys and, you know, I like all the people. I think all the people should get to live and enjoy some happiness and find others, you know, that they can identify with and, you know, let their personal journey unfold. And I don't like needless suffering. I don't like death. I hate it when little bitty kids die. So it wasn't a hustle or a con job, and I would always say things like, oh, we can write the book, man. You just write down what you say in here in the fucking meetings. You've been to meeting, right? And then in the editing session, we'd take some of this garbage we piled together, and we'd read it, you know, and a group of people like yourself, and there's something about the innate ear, you never hear about that. But by God, if a syllable is wrong in the reading, so the attic ear can pick it up, like, you know. So what we do is get a bunch of attic ears and say, okay, like, you know, we're going to read this, and then you mark it, and we'll discuss those marks, you know. And so your basic text was born in that kind of setting. That's why it stood the reading and the rereading all these years. It was born, you know, and it's mostly truth statements and people's personal experience. And don't think we're not technicians. I mean, we're like college kids too, you know. And you know, we benefited from all that. You know, it's true that some subjects are written, and part of the paragraph is appealing to the eye, and part of the paragraph to the ear, and part of the paragraph to the feeling. Because people are visual, audio, and kinesthetic. And you know, we care enough to do our homework. And you know, we want it to really, you know, work and help people. And the way we kind of looked at it is whatever we was writing was the stuff that was going to be laying out on the table somewhere when you had decided you were going to go ahead and use. You already had the drugs and the rig laid out, and you called your sponsor, and your sponsor had gotten loaded. Now, what's going to keep you clean then? And I'm sure I could answer a show of hands, but our literature, our real NA literature, is strong enough that you can be that close to using and say, fuck that shit, I ain't going to get loaded, you know. And you know, we're still doing that job of carrying that message today. And the first three lit conferences were opened with the words, perhaps someday the immortal words, well, now we're here, what are we going to do? And then, you know, technique-wise, what to bring everybody together, we'd go around the room and say, well, write down what you would like to see done this weekend or this week or whatever. I think the first World Lit Conference was only about two and a half days long. The second was after the World Convention in Wichita. That was in Wichita. Then the World Convention went to where the Lit Conference was. Get it? And after the World Convention in Wichita, we went 200 miles north to Lincoln. Well, up in Lincoln, they did things like part of the committee gave blood to Batoner. When's the last time any of y'all gave blood for N.A.? To their credit, the filthy good-for-nothing bums out in the streets of downtown Lincoln had a little vote amongst themselves and decided not to panhandle us. Because of what we were working on. The host committee got the downtown post office building. And I mean, this is like one of the federal white marble buildings. I love you, Janet. I tell people when I like have tears sharing, it's like there's tears of shame and guilt and fear, and there's also tears of intensity and powerful emotions and memory and stuff. And yeah, man, I've like really been subject to some powerful emotions. Well, I always have trouble with this one. If I'm gonna like sort of try to choke it out. A writer came in maybe it'll go a little easier if I stand up. A writer came in from the Platte River to Lincoln on a horse, and he had gotten it strung out in the trenches in Europe. And he couldn't read or write, but he wanted to help. That's pretty good. So, one funny thing happened, I think this may be real important, maybe very... very much more important than anybody realizes, because it sort of encapsulates the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous in a single sentence. I was sitting at the table, and this gal sitting beside me was just fidgeting and nervous and, you know, just looking like she had to go to the bathroom, but she wasn't leaving the room. And I said, you know, what's up? How long you been here? She said, I just got here. I said, well, have you said your lit prayer yet? She said, lit prayer, what's that? And I gave her an orientation sheet. And I said, go out in the hall and read this and do it. And then when you're done, you come on back in here. So she goes out in the hall and comes back 5 minutes later. She's sitting up straight, throwing her breast out, sitting at the table. And they read something another. She said, that's a lie. She's like with it, you know. And the lit prayer goes like this. God, free me of my self-will and ego, and give me the strength and guidance to do your footwork. That's the 12 steps in a nutshell. And I am so smart. I got clean in 74, lit chair in 79, the book done in 82, served on the board of trustees till 89, started writing when I went off the board of trustees because I was used to writing shit, right? And computers were coming out. And so 89, 99, 09. In 2009, I finally figured out that the lit prayer revolutionized the Narcotics Anonymous members who said it, because they were freed of their self-will and ego, and they had the strength and guidance to do God's footwork. And so to them, it became quite ordinary and normal to do this and to do that, because everybody knew it wasn't an ego trip. You know, what ego? Because they had said the lit prayer. And when we got done writing the basic text, we turned the book over to people who didn't write the basic text. And needless to say, they never heard of the lit prayer. So everything was still about ego and self-will and, you know, what's that strength and guidance shit? Well, I would tell you what, man. I'd rather have my conscious contact than $400 million free and clear in the bank in my name. Because with conscious contact, all of the little things I used to worry about just don't make any difference anymore. And all the miracles that I'm hooked on keep coming. You guys are a fucking beautiful miracle dream come true to me. And I'm sure that all the people that share up here feel the same way. Because you yearn in your heart to know what in the hell's going on. Will somebody please tell me what time it is? What is the truth? You know, I'd like to be able to see the big picture, you know. I'd like to hear what's going on. I want to feel it. And, you know, what's going on is a, you know, recovering addict hippie is a whole lot of love. Except it's not the kind of love that wants to use your body, and it's not the kind of love that you can sell on the sidewalk. It's another kind of love. It's deep. It's like a familial love. You know, except for the Bible and other things, the best quote I have to come out of Africa is, it takes a whole village to raise a child. And in Narcotics Anonymous, you find your village. All those brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and grandparents that you never had time to talk to, they're all around you. And so anyway, the first lit conference was 2 or 3 days long in Wichita. And out of that came the Handbook for NA Lit Committee. So a printer in Marietta says, you know, that's pretty good minutes there. You ought to make that into a booklet. And I said, well, we don't know how, Phil. And he says, well, I'll go over to Marietta Reefer Graphics and get it typeset, and I'll print you 1,000 copies for free, or some damn thing like that. Or real cheap, maybe $100. And so I said, you got a deal, man. So I went over there, and they typeset it, and I proofed it, and they made the corrections. They were real nice and liked us and all that. And so we put a dollar on the front so we could raise money, because we didn't get any funds, you know. We did the whole basic text with no outside financial support or technical support or anything. It's all just us chickens. Of course, us chickens got to be more numerous, especially with that good old lit prayer out there doing its job. And we never wanted for nothing. I mean, the people took real good care of us. And that was important to us, because we needed to feel like what we were doing was an extension of their will, like a greater will. And the Handbook for Lit Committees put everybody on the same page. And, you know, if you ever get a chance to really sit down and study an archival piece of that, it'll paint in a big part of the picture for you. On the technical side, you know, don't waste the time going into it up here, but it's something you can do for yourself, and you'll see what I'm saying. So after that, at Lincoln, we had a funny thing with California. I'd tell them we were up to, you know, 300 pages, 400 pages, 600 pages, 800 pages, and they would react like, ho-hum, ho-hum, oh yeah, number of pages. And I said, listen, we have 15 pounds of input They said, 15 pounds, my God. Why would they think that pounds was more meaningful? I couldn't understand it, but I just accepted it. And so that is a lot of paper, men and women, and there was like, you know. So what we did at Lincoln, after we called together and we had this great, beautiful building, that even more people showed up. Some of them maybe had been there the year before. And we had two heavy-duty copiers, I think, and in those days, you know, we didn't have any computers. We had access to one computer upstairs. It was very nice, and we appreciate it, but it was really, believe me, it was an old machine. I mean, compared to what we have today. But we worshiped electrics. Remember, they had the little balls in there that do fonts and stuff. We thought that was really cool. And we had a bunch of, so we'd talk about this, be working on stuff, and they'd be like typing it up. We'd tell the secretaries, look, we love you, we trust you, you know what it's like in the workshop. You said you led prayer. Feel free to fill in the blanks. You know, we want to read. It's going to be rough, but we want to read. We'll, you know, do some editing. So they'd be typing up. We'd be writing the stuff. We took the 800 pages, photocopied all 800 pages, and then had the members in attendance cut them up into little strips. And we went down to the office supply store and said, we need some scissors. And the lady says, oh, we have some very nice scissors over here for $7.99. They're excellent. And I said, no, we want some smaller scissors. You know, kind of like, she says, we have some that school kids use. I said, that's it. That's what we want. And lots of paste. You know, 39 cents. Yeah, we'll take 20 of them or 50 of them. So, and we really used them too. And you cut up these damn things. The idea being that an idea or a thought that kind of congeal, like on the fourth step, would go here. And then something on spiritual awakening would go there. And something on surrender or carrying a message would, you know, fit in. And it was kind of interesting because at the second World Lit Conference, my sponsor, Bob B., was there. Greg Pierce was there. You know, after somebody's died, we use the last name, so to cut down on confusion. But when you see me switch like that, I'm following a specific set of ironclad protocols, and they're there for a reason. But Greg, and I am an intimate, near, dear, lived together, didn't have sex, that I remember. And I'm sure I'd remember something like that, right? But we knew each other intimately, so he, like, moved in with me, you know, at one point. And so he had his flaws, okay? He was a human being. But when he was writing for Narcotics Anonymous, he was like a god that stepped down from the clouds. You'll never read better original NA writing than what Greg Pierce wrote. Now, two reasons for that, which I think kind of played a big role in the history of N.A. He wrote the story, I Was Different, because he came to N.A. in a business suit. And he couldn't bear to be a member of a fellowship that didn't have a service structure. So he wrote the service structure from scratch. Isn't that funny? And so he came to Lincoln with the idea of taking the white booklet, and of course I was lit chair and I concurred totally, to take the white booklet as an outline form and make, you know, like all these sentences and words in the white booklet into Roman numeral 1, A, B, 1, 2, 3, and then Roman numeral chapter 2, and so on. So we sorted the 800 pages to fit that chopic outline. And then we cut and pasted in, you know, the sentences from all the little piles of paper. We'd have like 25 addicts sitting around and paste them up. And then they'd be typed and then we'd smooth them, you know. And that's where all the chapters in your book came from. At the end of Lincoln, when we were winding down, and we'd done a lot, but we sort of had a pretty good idea what to do next. We thought, well, like, let me get this straight. So we're going to wait a year and have another lit chair and try to pick up where we're leaving off right now? That's kind of dumb, ain't it? And we're the lit committee. We know what time it is. We know what's going on. We know what to do next. And we have a number of months between now and the spring conference. Why don't we have another conference, you know, sort of squeeze it in? So in February is when we had the longest, biggest, knockdown, drag-out, loving, caring service conference in history of Narcotics Anonymous at Memphis, Tennessee. And we got that. It's like a Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That's a lot of days. People moved to Memphis after that just to work on the book for a month or two. One guy even commuted, you know, and worked and edited the basic text on the airplane trip. So it was hot, man. It was great. And towards the end of that conference, there's a world of technical stuff that went on. But I've got my high side, so I'm going to wind down just a second. We had 7 lit conferences. And they were all over the country, even in California. And in that time, I want to say another quick word about the local lit conferences. The local lit committees, they were grand. They were spectacular. We would ask them for input, and it became ever more precise, so there was specific stuff to work on. And they would start on a Friday night till late, get up, eat pancakes for breakfast, and work all day deep into the night, get up Sunday morning and do a little more, and they realized they weren't done. So they get together the following weekend and do it again. So people like that worked on your basic text that never attended the lit conferences. You know, they play a great unsung hero role in my book. And we could not have done it without them. And I'm a great one for bias. I would tell people, have a bias here. For every, we want to hear what you have experienced about recovery. But for every piece of writing we had, you know, 100 people thought of it, 10 people made it to the mailbox, 5 people had the postage stamp and the address right. So multiply the written input by at least 10, you know, because we're just their servants, and they trusted us with their hearts by sending in their input. So we took that real seriously. I can tell you some horror shows about what happened after the, you know, later years about that kind of input. But I take, you know, your writing and your love and care and surrender and devotion to the NA spirit very seriously. You know, always have, always will. Anyway, I want to thank the committee for doing a fine job of this get-together, and you couldn't get a better hotel. But the people here, I've learned, you know, basic stuff. I didn't know that Vito actually knew Lopez and Dorothy Berry. So we have people that are alive and still willing to talk about it. You go back to NA in the 40s and that kind of stuff, of the early, early days. So all of that, I'm still here to learn. I've learned a lot, and I hope to learn some more today, and I'm going to listen. Thank you.
You could do that twice as long and it wouldn't be long enough. My name's Jim. I'm an addict. Let's make this interactive. How many of you folks have a life goal of recovery from addiction? Hold in. That's pretty near everybody. How many of you base recovery from addiction on the idea of powerlessness over the disease? I'm going to pick up right where Bo left off. The Third World Literature Conference in Memphis, Tennessee, because those ideas were but a dream in a few people's hearts before Memphis, Tennessee. In Memphis, Tennessee, Narcotics Anonymous gave mankind a clear, concise language proper idea of what this whole thing is about. What this whole thing, recovery from addiction, powerlessness over the disease itself, not the symptoms. There were a few things that are really important that were built before that were a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. But that's about what we knew. Don't use and go to meetings. We shared with one another. In Memphis, Tennessee, we came together and defined the philosophy of Narcotics Anonymous as you and I know it today. Everything that happened before was but preamble. I was allowed to be there. If you were clean at that time, you would have been allowed to be there. You didn't have to have a credential. You didn't have to have a degree. You didn't have to buy somebody off or have a service position. All you needed to have was the willingness to help. It's called open participatory service. And if you get a chance, own an NA tree. Own a blue service manual. Read it for yourself and see what I saw. The opportunity for a simple country boy from northeastern Ohio to be a part of something. The opportunity to give back. Because, you know, if I hadn't discovered and been told and believed in powerlessness over the disease, I could have never stopped using. Perhaps some of you feel the same. Let me ask you a couple other questions. Do you believe in the second tradition, that group conscience, loving God process, and that our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern? Do you believe in that? Do you believe in self-support through financial support and our creativity? Do you believe in that? Do you believe in direct responsibility? That we can only, as a fellowship, create service boards and committees that are directly responsible to us? Do you believe in that? I'm going to challenge you to show it. Show it. When we got together at Memphis, the open participatory service involvement in Narcotics Anonymous came to maturation, and we drew together over 100 members. Do you know what that means in 1981? 100 members? You know, shortly before that, there probably weren't more than a couple hundred members in all of NA. But 100 people showed up from California to New England, from Minnesota to Florida. The world of Narcotics Anonymous. By phone. He said Africa and New Zealand. Well, Australia too, sometime in the process. And we cut and paste. Yeah, I mean really, cut and paste. Not like on your computer. I'm going to personalize it a little bit. I'd been to the 1980 World Service Conference as an alternate to the delegate from Pennsylvania. And when I got there, I found I had to sit on my hands. I couldn't talk. I couldn't be a part of. Because alternates don't get to talk, you know? I thought I was going to Mecca, to the throne of Narcotics Anonymous. You know what I found? I found addict alcoholics in charge who believed, both through their words and actions, that Narcotics Anonymous was but a point of identification for folks to come into real recovery over in the Liquid Fellowship. That's what I found. People committed to that. Honest, useful, loving people, but right up to the director of the World Service Office, people committed to that idea. Maybe some of you wonder why there weren't a whole lot of historical figures involved in the literature movement, and perhaps that's part of the answer. At Memphis, we had hundreds of typewriters. We had, well, maybe not quite hundreds. We had dozens of typewriters. We had dozens of copy machines. We had reams of paper. And the literature committee had communicated with all of us, saying, you are the book. You may be the only book that somebody ever reads. Come, write your story. Write down what helped you in a meeting. Be a part of. Everybody, anybody. Not a select few. And that spirit just filled us with passion. We got the words right. We sent out the gray review form to all the registered groups in Narcotics Anonymous. 600 of them. All 600. We asked for input from anybody and everybody, and local literature committees went to work and generated input. This is great, this is good, leave it alone, or this needs to be changed, this line, this page, add this, take this away. That input all piled in. And we had another literature conference in May in Santa Monica, California. And the trustees finally got involved. And we factored in input. Every single tiny little piece. If you had an idea and you took the time to send it in, your idea was important enough to become a part of. Then we went through that time after time after time, factoring in, reading, analyzing, editing, and redoing. We did that all week long in Santa Monica. We did it all week long in June in Warren, Ohio. We did it all week long in September in Miami, Florida. Now remember, we've gone from February to September. It was proofread, it weathered trusted servants who decided not to be trusted anymore. It weathered the worst of us. It was proofread, and it was printed into this. Some of you see me carrying this around. This was then distributed 7 months later to all the registered groups in Narcotics Anonymous. 1,800 of them. 600 to 1,800 in 7 months. There's never been that kind of growth in Narcotics Anonymous before or since. And this, and may I? This, and you were the reason. You were included. Included. This then became our basic text. And some other things happened too, and I'm sure those will be covered. What's important is, in my mind, that the inclusion of the entire fellowship made this a grassroots movement. Oh, Bo is the most wonderful leader. I can't tell you how wonderful, how inspiring, how blessed with the Spirit Bo was. I can't tell you how organized, how methodical, how thoughtful and gentle Joseph was. And all those things, all our talents, and even my abrasive knowledge of the language. All of it came together and we birthed the philosophy of recovery from addiction that the world needs, that mankind is hungry for. Last night I heard somebody talking about us pandering to treatment centers. Guys, we needed 12-step treatment centers. We have the answer. They're just reaching. They have some of our newcomers. But what happened to 12-step work? Why don't we get newcomers direct? Well, anyway, that's another subject. I asked you if you believed in the second tradition. To me, the zenith, the height of the second tradition in Narcotics Anonymous was the distribution and approval of this. And it's gone downhill ever since. I asked you if you believed in the seventh tradition. To me, the seventh tradition isn't just about money. I'm frustrated. I want to write. I got so much from that experience and I can't have it anymore and I can't give it to you in the existing structure of so-called service in NA. How do you think that all the typewriters got rented? All the paper got bought? All the stamps got bought? All of this was funded? How do you think that happened? Let me share something with you that I want you to take home. If the spiritual purpose is right, the money is always there. If your area, region, or world service is asking for money, what do you think's wrong? Perhaps the spiritual purpose isn't right. Perhaps. I asked you if you believed in the ninth tradition. And we're growing and we can get better. But show me the line of direct responsibility from your area to the member back home. Show me the line of direct responsibility from your region to the group back home. Show me the line of direct responsibility from NAS to anything but the almighty dollar. We have literature written by addicts for addicts, but it ain't everything that's got the name Narcotics Anonymous on it. Sorry to tell you. Because that open participation, that beautiful, wonderful thing that includes all of us, got shut down through expediency. My opinion is, through expediency, money, property, and prestige. Do you believe in the ninth tradition? Then do something about it. Do something about it. It's your fellowship. I want to stay. I also heard an error made last night about something in Philadelphia called Addicts Anonymous. Here's what really happened. all those bright spirits that were involved in the literature process, involved in the service development process in Narcotics Anonymous, walked out of NA when we violated our traditions, never to come back. And many others have too. Everybody sitting up here has been marginalized and defamated by folks concerned with money, property, and prestige. Everybody's sitting up here. And you too, probably. I know a lot of you have. If you believe in the ninth tradition, if you believe in the seventh tradition, if you believe in the second tradition, then do something about it. There's a line in a basic text that I end my talks with because I think it's one of the most beautiful lines that I've seen, and I didn't help write it, so, you know, I can embrace it. It goes, shaping my thoughts with the spiritual ideals I'm moving toward, I'm free to be who I want to be. Thank you.